Hi, and welcome into the 19th Hole Golf Show. My name is Ryan Ballingy. You can follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy and follow Golf Newsnet as well at Golf Newsnet. Find my work at golfnewsnet.com, which is our website as well. On Yahoo Sports' Devil Ball Golf blog, sports.yahoo.com. The PGA Tour playoffs take a break this week after the Deutsche Bank Championship and the interlude into the BMW Championship, where the top 70 in players get together for the penultimate leg of the four-leg playoff series, with the top 30 players in the point standings after the BMW Conway Farms just outside Chicago, moving on to the Tour Championship in Atlanta, getting them a guaranteed spot in the first three majors of 2016 as well, a very nice payday, and definitely a good chance at one of the best in the sport. And for the players in the top five heading into East Lake, a win and in scenario where if you win the Tour Championship, you win $10 million as well, making for about an $11.5 million payday. Sounds pretty awesome. But till we get to then, we have a week off to discuss what's happened in the last couple of weeks. We didn't have a podcast last week leading into the Deutsche Bank Championship talking about the Barclays. I was on vacation with my family, and I didn't think you guys wanted to hear my son screaming in the background as I talked about golf and all those kinds of things for 25 minutes. So we kind of skipped that for last week, and so we're playing a little bit of catch-up here in our first podcast in September. But you have to walk away really impressed by Ricky Fowler and what he accomplished over the 4 days at TPC Boston to stand up to Henrik Stenson, who looked perfect out on the golf course for about 69 holes, and only to screw it up with a double bogey on the 70th hole of the tournament, putting his tee shot in the drink at the 16th at TPC Boston, making double and then not being able to recover, opening the door for Fowler to win by a shot at 15 under par. Pretty awesome stuff from Fowler, who seems to have found a groove in tight races and tight tournaments. If you look back at his wins this year, obviously won the Players' Championship in record fashion in terms of the final holes performance, the last six holes, became the first player to win the Players in a three-hole playoff system, which they have adopted, and he did it in sudden death, birdieing the 17th hole three times in a row in one day, which is pretty incredible and unlikely to be repeated barring some kind of weather catastrophe in the championship's history. It's pretty awesome for him. And then to take the Scottish Open against a top field, I'll be missing some folks, but a top field nonetheless, and he did it in a really tight situation again with Kuchar and Dewison and some others right up there, Gullin giving him a run for his money, but walks away the winner. And then in this situation, which with about seven holes to play, clearly became a match play situation between Stenson and Fowler. Charlie Hoffman had a really nice comeback over the course of the final round to get into the top five, really the top three, but he was nowhere near Fowler. Even when Fowler was a couple of shots behind Stenson, there was always a gap of four or five shots between second and third. So it became a match play situation, and Fowler again thrived and seized on the mistake. It's not that Fowler completely backed into this one or Stenson choked it away. I mean, you're eventually going to make mistakes in golf. But I think Fowler realized that he had to play a different brand of golf coming into the house with the lead and did it, protected it, and walks away the champion. Now he's third in FedEx Cup points behind Jason Day and Jordan Spieth. Spieth missed the cut yet again at the Deutsche Bank Championship, first time in his young pro career he's missed back-to-back cuts. And I think that unto itself leads into a discussion topic of how often we talk, and we'll get into this in the context of a Fowler winning as well. But we've been so quick, at least throughout the sport, there's been so quick to go, well, now we've got a new big three. We've got Spieth and McIlroy and Day as the sport's new big three. All hail, all hail. And it turns out those guys aren't nearly as good as Nicklaus and Palmer and Player, or even the old big three that they tried to put together in Tiger's era of Ernie, Phil, and Tiger. So at this point, I mean, I know those guys between them have seven major championships. There's nothing to scoff at. And a lot of those major championships, five of them, came in the last two seasons. Again, nothing to scoff at. But before we pronounce these guys the future inheritors of that title, of that really important title, Big Three in our sport, I think we got to consider the fact that there could be a fourth in Ricky Fowler, who now has three wins this year worldwide. He has, like Spieth and Day, his first multi-win PGA Tour season this year. Still has room to get to the same number of wins that they had, albeit not with a major championship in tow. But if he wins out from here, which is pretty unlikely, but still possible, could walk away with 4 wins this year on the PGA Tour, 5 worldwide. I think that for the golf world to be so quick to just go, all right, this is the future, let's run with the future narrative. That's kind of the problem of golf journalism. It's kind of the problem of golf discussion. It's a problem of sports discussion and where golf fits into it, because we're so quick nowadays, especially where reaction is supposed to be instant on Twitter or Facebook. Everything is, to the extreme. It's a superlative. It's either the best or the worst, most likely, least likely. That's always the way that it is. I mean, it's the greatest shot I've ever seen. It's the worst thing anyone's ever done. It's quick to draw comparisons. I mean, you even look to some celebrities who want to kind of compare Trump to things. I mean, think about Donald Trump's relevancy, and then here comes a comedian to compare Donald Trump to Adolf Hitler. Not even close. Trump is not that, he's not that bad of a guy. He may be a bad guy, but he ain't that bad of a guy. And we have this propensity to want to embellish and give things more credit than they deserve, or take away credit too quickly when it's not necessary. I think golf as a sport has kind of found itself a little bit stuck in that rut where we go, okay, well, Rory wins 2 majors in 2014. He is the new inheritor of the sport. He's the new number one. All hail King Rory. Then Spieth comes along and wins the Masters because he's a clean-cut American kid who's a Republican's wet dream. We all declare him the all-American future of the sport, and all hail King Jordan. And then Jordan wins 2 major championships, gets close to a third and a fourth in a calendar year, and we're willing to declare that this is his game now. Meanwhile, McIlroy sat idly by for the final 2 majors, realistically. I know he played the PGA Championship, but still, he wasn't really a factor. But we're willing to just discount that and just say, okay, well, it's Jordan's time now. And then Jason Day comes along, has a very gritty performance, an emotional performance to win the PGA, does it in record scoring fashion, 20 under par, first to do that for 72 holes in a major, wins by 3, and we all go, okay, well, now it's Jason Day's time, especially since he's won 2 of his last 3 starts, and then he goes and wins the Barclays for 3-4, and okay, well, it's this guy's time. Well, Day finished T12 in his streak at TPC Boston of 22 rounds or better on the PGA, of par or better on the PGA Tour, came to an end. The reality is these guys are dead tired. And so it comes back to the discussion of what's wrong with Jordan Spieth. Well, probably nothing. He's probably tired. Can you imagine what and he's mentioned this before. He mentioned it in answer to me, I believe, one of my questions after the PGA Championship in the news conference was, he's tired. It takes a lot out of you to do this. It's mentally draining. It's physically draining to have the kind of season that Fowler did have, I mean, for that matter, Day had, and Spieth had. All of them are experiencing that kind of year on a professional stage for the first time. It is exhausting. At a certain point, you just kind of have to slump your shoulders a little bit and just give up for a week or two. And I think it's more or less what Spieth has done here. And I know folks want to maybe peg his poor performance at the Barclays on a club switch to the new Titleist Irons. That's not the case, and he even said as much. These guys are good enough they can play with senior flex shafts and hickory heads and figure out a way to make birdies. That's not the concern here. I think for these guys, both Day and Spieth and Fowler, who's now probably going to be a little exhausted but also a little amped at the BMW, these guys got to find a way to power through the next couple weeks and just go. Just get to the finish line, and then they can take a little time off before the President's Cup. All three guys are a part of those teams. Obviously, McIlroy isn't. He's from Europe. He's not from the rest of the world. He's not from the U.S. So those guys have some work ahead of them, and then they can take some time off and wait about a month and a half before they get into their silly season starts or kind of off-season starts. Spieth's going to play the Australian Open. I'm sure Fowler will find something to do, and then you get the Hero World Challenge for those guys as well. So it's a big little, it's a nice little time off before you get into a couple big events, especially with McIlroy as well. Having the European Tours Race to Dubai Final Series coming up. He's going to play in 3 or 4 of those events. So that's kind of his fall schedule as well, fall/early winter schedule. And at a certain point, these guys are just playing, at least in the case of Spieth and Fowler, I think, too much golf. If you look at the divisor in the official World Golf Ranking, Spieth is number one again this week, basically just because the math works out right. Not that he's not necessarily all that much better than McIlroy, but if you dig more into the numbers, you see that perhaps he is, because Spieth has 55 tournaments as his divisor in the world ranking, which is basically a measure of how many world ranking points you earned over the last 2 years, reduced by some formula, which we're not going to get into, over time, so that the points lose value over time in the rolling two-year cycle, divided by the number of tournaments that you played in the two-year cycle. Speed's divisor is 55, McElroy's is 44. Part of that is injury, but for the most part, McElroy's figured out how to keep a tighter, shorter schedule while trying to straddle being a member of the PGA Tour and the European Tour. There's a lot of events, all the World Golf Championships events that he wants to play. He doesn't play the HSBC Champions typically. All the majors. Those are all crossover events to PGA Tour and European Tour membership. So for him, he's got eight events if he wants to take it, built in toward the membership for both schedules. That still leaves quite a bit of work to do for McElroy, who has to get 7 events in to meet the mandate on the PGA Tour of having a minimum of 15, and he's got to get another 5 in to get the mandate in for the European Tour. So all told, he's got to play somewhere in the area of 20 events a year. No more, no less, and that's what he does, and he does it pretty damn well. Spieth, on the other hand, has no European Tour membership to keep up, and is still at the point in his life where he wants to play with some regularity, and I think he's still trying to figure out if he's going to be one of those guys like Tiger who tries to find the courses he loves and just plays those just for the confidence building and stacking of wins, or if he wants to be a guy who occasionally shows up to a random place and says, yeah, I'm going to give this one a try and see how it goes. I don't know what kind of guy he's going to become, and I don't think he knows that yet, but that means he still played 55 tournaments in the last 104 weeks, and that's a lot of golf for anybody, including middle-of-the-road PGA Tour guys who tend to play 25 times a year. So he's playing even more golf than that worldwide as the number one player in the world, at least this week. He's going to lose it on Sunday night as the math will change and McElroy will be number one heading into the BMW. But so we've got all these guys who are kind of close to one another, and Fowler deserves to be in the conversation despite the fact that he doesn't have a major. It seems pretty evident he's going to get one at a certain point, just like we said about Jason Day, and eventually that came true. Kind of there now. So we've got those four guys. If you want to call it a big four, I still think that's a misnomer too. I think that's shutting the door on other guys who could potentially be in that big, great, whatever conversation. You've got Patrick Reed, who has obviously slowed down second half of this year, but got off to a good start early this year, picked up another win at the Hyundai Tournament of Champions. You've got Brooks Koepka, who won earlier this year at Phoenix and put in 3 really good performances down the stretch of the regular season before coming to the playoffs and laying a total egg in both the first 2 legs, which cost him a spot on the President's Cup team. You've got Justin Thomas, who will soon figure out how to play on Sundays and win on the PGA Tour. You've got Patrick Rogers, who earned his membership through the PGA Tour thanks to, in part, a second-place finish at the Wells Fargo, and earned his membership through the Web.com Tours money list. Obviously, he takes precedence on the PGAtour.com way of earning it, but pretty impressive for a guy 1 year out of college, 1 full year out of college to do that. And then you've got other guys down the list that are coming or are just about to turn pro through the Walker Cup teams. Bryson DeChambeau is coming. Lee McCoy is coming. More players are coming of that ilk. And they're still going to want to compete. They're not going to just go, oh, well, we've got a big three, I guess I'll just take my place in line. The sport's in a really exciting time right now for us to try to handicap it or name it or quantify it or whatever with a certain number of guys that are big and other guys that aren't. I think it's a mistake. I think we should just appreciate it for what it is. And in a few years, we can start to codify how this all played out. Just like at the time when we looked back at, let's say, 2003, 2004, when we were looking at the supposed big three, big four, big five. I mean, there were different periods where that was the kind of the big number. You had Tiger and Ernie and Phil and Vijay and Retief. Goosen were all kind of parts of those monikers for a piece of time. And eventually you go, well, Tiger is way better than all those guys. I mean, he was just so far superior. But so in one sense, you can go, okay, well, it really wasn't ever a big anything. It was just Big Tiger, and that's it. But then you look back at their career resumes and how it all panned out, and maybe it deserves a little bit more credit for what it was. I mean, Vijay won 3 majors, has the most wins above 40 of any player in PGA Tour history. Ernie wound up winning 4 majors. Phil, at least to date, has won 5. I would assume he may get a 6th, but even if it's only a 5, that ain't bad. And Retief Goosen had back trouble, which kind of screwed him over, but he won two major championships and nearly had a third in his hand. What's wrong with that group? Nothing. That's good. That's a good group of five players of that era. So maybe they didn't consistently beat Tiger Woods as much as we would have wanted to make it a little bit more dramatic, but that was certainly a big five, I think. I think if we look back in 10 years, 15 years, on what the cumulative effect of what McIlroy, Spieth, Day, and Fowler, and others accomplished, then we can decide who was big, who was little, when they got big, when they stopped being big, and all that stuff. And then we can turn history's lens on it and really do what golf does best, which is appreciate our history and look back at it through eyes of storytelling and statistics that are now here that weren't there during Jack and Arnie's era, and really be able to tell you who was best and when they were best and all that good stuff. So, again, I think we're making a mistake trying to decide who's in what group and who's in what stable and who deserves attention when they're winning and when they're not and who should be, you know, all that stuff. We haven't got the answers yet. As far as we know, we have Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, and Jordan Spieth with exactly one multi-win season on the PGA Tour. They may never do it again. I don't think that's the case, but that's possible. And if it is, then for us to shove them into a big three for longer than 6 weeks looks kind of dumb, doesn't it? So let's let things play out a little bit. But give Fowler props for winning in a big boy tournament. It's not a major, but it is a big boy tournament. 98-player field with no real duds in it. I mean, these are the top 100 guys on the PGA Tour this year. And 98 play with Garcia and Will Wilcox choosing not to play. You know, Wilcox couldn't play because of injury, but it's a pretty accomplished feat, I think. And if Fowler somehow goes on and pulls off the FedEx Cup, I'm not saying he had a comparable season to either of those guys, to any of those guys, but if he goes ahead and wins the Tour Championship, wins $10 million, I'm going to tell you he had a better year than Rory McIlroy, by far. And part of that is injury-induced, but again, I would tell you that his year was better. And he would probably be top three in the world at that point, top four, top three, somewhere in there. And then maybe we can start to chat a little bit about the foundation for a big four or something like that, the four horsemen, whatever we're going to call them. Still not sure on a name. I think golf does a pretty crappy job of coming up with stable names of groups of guys that are so great. Every other sport has very clever names for groups of players in their city or on their teams that they appreciate, but we don't do that in golf. We got to come up with a better kind of stable name like wrestling does for its players. So I like Four Horsemen. That's not original, but I will be open to your suggestions, which you can send to me on Twitter at Ryan Bellingy or at Golf News Net. To shift a little bit to the President's Cup, because Jay Haas and Nick Price announced their captain's picks on Tuesday, I think there's quite a bit of a surprise here that Phil Mickelson was, his name was called as the second of, or the first of two captain's picks from Jay Haas, at least announced. Phil finished 30th in points, and that means for him to have gotten picked, Jay Haas had to pass over guys like J.B. Holmes, who admittedly hadn't played well late, but was 12th in points. Webb Simpson, who was making a charge. Charlie Hoffman obviously had a good weekend at the Deutsche Bank. Kevin Na, who's been pretty consistent over the last couple of years. Brooks Koepka was up there. Billy Horschel, the defending FedEx Cup champion, was up there ahead of Phil in points. And Jay Haas just decided to do two things with his pick for Phil. Give Phil a little bit of a career achievement award because he's never missed, he hasn't missed an American team President's Cup or Ryder Cup since 1993. That's one. Second, he just loves the kind of guy Phil Mickelson is in the team room. And I don't know if that's a reflection of a philosophical difference between Jay Haas and Tom Watson, who obviously drew Mickelson's ire for how he handled the Ryder Cup team in 2014 at Glen Eagles, or if that's just Jay Haas being a Phil Mickelson guy, or, as Haas said in his remarks explaining why in the hell he did this, saying he talked to a number of the guys that were on the team automatically and asked them who they wanted, and to a person, they said Phil. And if that's the case, then we can kind of examine what the point of the captain's picks are. But in my philosophy, the captain's picks should be the two next best players available that didn't make the team. Next best meaning how they're playing right now, not next best in terms of status in all-time majors status and all-time PGA Tour wins, which obviously Phil Mickelson would win compared to the other guys that were ahead of him on the list. I have a problem with that because I think there's some irony here in that Mickelson is the guy who set up this kind of structure of Tuesday matches, a series of mentoring opportunities for players like him, especially him with the guys like Fowler and Bradley and others, and creating this Tuesday game that's going to become its own thing, its own celebrity. And he wants to pave the future for the sport, impart knowledge on some guys that he believes are going to be special in the future. And he isn't asked to step aside for those very same guys, or at least one of those very same guys, that he's trying to mold with what it is to be a PGA Tour pro in the 21st century. I have a problem with that a little bit. But the President's Cup is ultimately an exhibition, and it's not a competitive one at that. The Americans have only ever lost once in 1998 at Royal Melbourne since this thing started in 94. There's been one tie in 2003 at Fancourt, and the Americans are otherwise undefeated. So they're 8-1-1 in the 10 tries of this series. So until the internationals figure out a way not only to win at all, but win on American soil, this really isn't much of a thing. So does it really matter all that much that Phil Mickelson made the team as opposed to Brooks Koepka? I would suggest so, only because a lot of these same guys are going to play on this team, the American team, for the Ryder Cup in a year. And that the format has been changed this year for the President's Cup, that it mirrors more the Ryder Cup. So the Americans stand to gain more by playing this as almost a pseudo Ryder Cup. And I know that's a shot to the PGA Tour a little bit, saying your thing doesn't matter, and it doesn't. So if you kind of embrace it as the every, you know, the biennial opportunity for the U.S. to kick somebody's ass collectively and set up something for the Ryder Cup the next year, then I think that's really what the President's Cup can and should be. And you have the Ryder Cup captain, Davis Love III, as an assistant to Jay Haas, along with Fred Couples, who was the outgoing President's Cup captain, won the last three matches. You've got Steve Stricker there, who's eventually going to be either a President's Cup or a Ryder Cup captain, probably a President's Cup captain. And I think that Love probably sees this, even if he's not saying so outwardly, as partially an opportunity to figure out who's going to do what and how they're looking and how they might perform as teams going into next year at Hazeltine. So in one sense, I'm kind of annoyed that Phil made the team, was named to the team. And the other, I'm like, well, who cares? I mean, ultimately, does it really matter? No, I guess not. But people take the Ryder Cup more seriously than they could ever take the President's Cup, at least at this stage of its existence. So maybe it's just worth it to give Phil his career achievement award. And if he doesn't make the Ryder Cup team, at least we got him to see him in action this year. I don't know. Phil Haas is the other pick, and I know that is going to come across as a little ridiculous on first sight. You go, okay, well, the dad picks the son. That's kind of nepotism, but it's not. Haas was 11th in points, and Golf Digest, I think, did this. And basically, the overwhelming percentage of the time, at least on the American side, the 11th guy or the first guy out of an American team gets picked. And for good reason. It's kind of like a nice little runner-up reward. Phil Haas has won this year, won the Humana Challenge. He had some good finishes in two of his last four starts, the Quicken Loans and Greensboro. Both are events in which he has done well in the past. So, I mean, they're kind of horse-for-course things a little bit. But still, he did play well in those events. He didn't play well in the others, but that's fine. He deserves to be on the team as far as that goes. It's fine by me. And Jay Haas gets to avoid awkward dinners with his family for the remainder of his life. So I think we're totally fine with that. So that kind of sets the table for the last couple of weeks, and we move to the BMW Championship with the top 70 players in the standings. And I think at this point, for the guys who are in the top five, at least top three, you kind of can relax. First, it's a no-cut event. Second, it's not very likely that you'll be ousted from the top five, especially if you're Spieth and Day. So you're playing four rounds just to figure out where your game's at before you go to East Lake and try to win the Tour Championship and therefore the FedEx Cup. So the real intrigue is going to be at the other end. Guys are trying to crawl into the top 30. It's really difficult to move up 40 places in the FedEx Cup. So if you're in 60th to 70th, you're going to have an awfully difficult time in making the Tour Championship unless you win or finish second. And that's pretty much your only way in. the other intrigue is going to be Hunter Mahan, who had looked dead in the water at the Barclays. Then we set up a post on Golf Newsnet, ready to go that Sunday, going, all right, well, he's done. The streak's over of him playing in every single FedEx Cup event since 2007. And then he made it. And so we kind of had to push that one back. And he got through the Barclays, still in the top 100. He got through the Deutsche Bank Championship with a big move, finishing inside the top 10. The finish he needed to get into the BMW Championship field. He basically needs a top 3 or top 4, I would imagine, probably get in to the top 30 without thinking about it. But the top 8 would probably get him close, I think. We have to look at those standings again, figure it all out. But that would be pretty remarkable. That is a story at this point. I mean, he's the only guy who's played in every FedEx Cup event. He's going to play in his 35th of 35 played in the ninth year of the concept. And if he gets through to the Tour Championship again, that'd be pretty spectacular. I mean, he's going to play in the majors next year regardless, so it's not really like an award for that. But it would be pretty cool for his streak to continue going. So interested to see if that takes place at Conway Farms. The other note I want to talk about this week is the final LPGA major of the year, the Evian Championship in France, the fifth of five majors. It's a little strange in that it's third, fourth year as a major now. And it still really hasn't found its place as a major championship, part because it's in France, so American audiences, which are 6 hours behind what's going on in the Alps, are kind of like, well, whatever, it's just a tournament. And I think because the first year was shortened to 54, and then you have a winner shoot 61 in Joachim to win. I mean, that was a little ridiculous to have 61 as a possibility in a major championship, because we've never seen 62 in a men's major to go to 61. You go, oh, hey, wait, that's kind of funky. And eventually this tournament's going to find its groove. I mean, the golf course is really, really good. They've played it every year for, 25 years. It's been a mainstay on the LET, and finally getting the status that I don't know that necessarily deserves, but that it's bought into on the LPGA side as a major championship. And Indy Park is going for yet another major title. Excuse me. Trying to wrap up, I guess, the super career Grand Slam, because the LPGA has decided that if you win 4 majors of the 5 that are available, then you are a Grand Slam holder. If you win 5 of the majors, you get a super career Grand Slam. And if you're Kari Webb, you are the only person active in women's golf right now who could potentially win 6 Grand Slam events in her career, because she won 4 of the existing 5. She also won the Du Maurier, which is now the Canadian Pacific Women's Open, but that used to be a major championship. And if she wins the Evian as a major, she would have 6 majors under her belt, at least 6 individual major titles under her belt. Obviously, that's not going to be a thing for much longer. Kari Webb has shown flashes of brilliance, but she's not going to play forever, certainly on this level. But there's a little bit of intrigue there. And then the other bit of it is, can Lydia Ko, who has done tremendously well in kind of standard issue LPGA events, especially the Women's Open. I mean, if the Du Maurier was still a major championship, Lydia Ko at this point would be a 3-time major champion. However, it's not. And she has no majors, and she really hasn't come all that close in them, except in this championship. So if she's going to pick off one, this isn't a bad place to start, given her track record here. There's coverage on Golf Channel, 6 hours ahead, morning and afternoon wave, 3 hours each day, Thursday, Friday, big long day Saturday, and then the final 90 minutes air on NBC on Sunday morning. So there is golf to check out. There's also the web.com tour finals start this week, and the KLM Open is over there in Holland and the Netherlands. And Tom Watson is actually in the field. I didn't know that until today. I thought that was pretty cool. But for the web.com tour finals, they kick off with the Hotel Fitness Championship in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And as Golf Week rightly pointed out, Anirban Lahiri is really the story going in. He's 40th in the world. He earned enough money with his top 5 finish at the PGA Championship to earn enough non-member money to get into the web.com tour finals, which is reserved for the top 75 players on the web.com tour's regular season money list, and numbers 126 through 200 in FedEx Cup points on the PGA Tour, as well players who get in based on non-member points or non-member money, which is Lahiri. So there is a potential for him, if he does well in the series, to earn his PGA Tour card, going from a guy at the start of the year that was basically just trying to play European Tour events as he could through Asian Tour exemptions into the field, you know, kind of Asian Tour relationships into the field, He won twice, got in the top 50 in the world, played in the majors, played well in the PGA. Now is a chance to get a PGA Tour card, and again, would be a super huge thing for him for next year. It would be a world-changing opportunity. Now, the interesting thing for Lahiri is that he's only going to be able to play in three of the four events. He's going to skip the last event, the Web.com Tour Championship, because it coincides with him traveling to Korea to play in the President's Cup, for which he qualified first Indian player to ever do that. Obviously, there's a precedence there, being a part of that, than getting your PGA Tour card, so he's going to go do that. So he's got three events to figure out a way to get into the 25 open PGA Tour cards that are available. There are 50 altogether. 25 are already doled out or reserved for players who finished in the top 25 on the Web.com Tour money list. Then their priority order is shuffled based on what they earn in the regular season and these finals together. So we'll kind of sort that out over the four events. But Lahiri has three events to earn enough money to get in that top 25 of the players that don't already have cards. Super intriguing. I think the story is going to be pretty cool. So that's over on Golf Channel as well this weekend. That's going to do it for us this week. Next week on the show, we'll get you ready for the BMW Championship. We'll talk about the Evian as well, and we'll find some other stuff to banter about for 25 or 30 minutes. Please give us a 5-star review on iTunes if you use that. Please leave your comments about the show there as well. We're happy to answer your questions or comments on the air if you leave them with a 5-star review. A 5-star review, people, at iTunes. Or you can just send me your questions or comments on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy, or through email, if that's still your thing, at ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. So until next week, when we get ready for the third leg of the FedEx Cup playoffs, I'm Ryan Ballingy saying thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.